All right, everybody, what's up? Doing something a little different today. This podcast interview with Ed Stetzer, or I should probably call it a conversation since there's three people involved. But if anything, it was an interview with Ed Stetzer by Pastor Greg Surratt and Joey Svensson. Pastor Greg being one of my pastors and the founding pastor at Seacoast Church. Anyway, the plan is to release this episode on this podcast, obviously, because you're listening to it right now, but release it also on Pastors Collective, which is a podcast that Pastor Greg is a part of. So, Pastor Greg and I just sat down to record two intros, one for Pastor With No Answers and one for Pastors Collective. And doggone it, if I didn't like how the intro turned out for Pastors Collective more than I liked how the intro for Pastor With No Answers turned out. So that is the one that I'm going to air. Enjoy it. Enjoy the interview. And may God be with us through all of this turmoil. My hearts are with you all. And thanks for listening.
This is Greg Surratt, and this is the Pastors Collective podcast. Normally I'm here with Darren Patrick, but I did something different. I got a phone call about an hour before we recorded this podcast that we're going to do right now from Joey Svensson, who has a podcast called Pastors With No Answers.
And just one pastor.
Just a pastor. Okay.
Yeah.
He's the only pastor that has no answer.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I don't want to put that on everybody else.
Okay. All right. Joey's a friend. He works with us here at Seacoast and has quite an extensive background in podcasting. And Joey, explain, what did you do? Why did you invite me along? And what's our podcast about today?
Yeah, so I thought it would just be a good thing to have you on board, honestly, just for an extra voice. And I thought maybe you did have some background with Ed Stetzer. And you are kind of on just the nature of what you do. You're kind of on the front lines of thinking through all of this COVID-19 stuff. You're probably processing things that I haven't had to yet. And so I just thought it would be neat. And I guess selfishly, I wanted you to be on the podcast because I like you and thought it'd be fun.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Got a little bromance going on there.
There you go.
Well, Ed Stetzer is a prophetic voice. He really is. Some of you may know him, some of you may not. He works with the Billy Graham. I should know exactly what his title is. He's at Wheaton. And he's over the Billy Graham deal there. Whatever, that's close enough.
The Billy Graham deal, I like it.
Do you like that?
It has Billy Graham's name in it.
Yeah, it'll kill me for that. But anyway, he has a prophetic voice. He always has. He pushes the edges. And he had a Facebook rant that I think you heard, and it kind of piqued your interest.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and piqued my interest, and I guess in some sort of, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I also thought other people need to hear this, because if he's right, then we need to change gears. And that's pretty much what this podcast episode is about, is how churches need to change gears with what we're spending most of our time doing right now.
That's good. So any last thoughts before we...
Yeah, I do have a request. There's a chance that some of the listeners listen to both of our podcasts. Can we just go ahead and tell them if that's the case, then listen on Pastor With No Answers and not Pastors Collective?
Nope. Yours is too dangerous. I want to keep my audience safe. Let's listen just a little bit to the interview that we had with Ed Stetzer.
So, Ed, thank you so much for joining us. I want to jump right into a scripture that I think of. Look at the sparrow, look at the flowers, God takes care of them. And this really is a test of faith for churches. I mean, it's scary. And I hate saying that, but I'm an open book. It is kind of scary. And
listened to your Facebook message. One of our campus pastors threw it out there on our text group, and listened to it after a jog, and it was a very sober listen. And basically imploring people to stop focusing on the internal delivery systems and move on to the mission that we need to be on and preparing for. So I guess I think a good way to start this off is, why don't you give a little snapshot of that 22-minute jam-packed little monologue that you gave us?
Yeah, I did. I did look. One of my staff, Josh Laxton, said that I looked a little bit like Doc from Back to the Future, pointing at things and saying, "You need to pay attention to this." You know, I've subsequently learned how to, you know, put Zoom through Facebook Live, but I didn't know, so I'm literally like moving anyway. But here's the thing: I was up Sunday night. I think it was Sunday night and Monday morning. And I kept seeing people talk about the crisis. And I think I totally get that there's a crisis of communications. There's a crisis of church structures here. And I'm not anti that, right? So I'm the interim teaching pastor at the oldest extant megachurch in the world. It was a crisis to try to get this big traditional church to online.
Yeah.
But that's not the crisis. Matter of fact, we're not even in the crisis. Very few people listen to this are in the crisis, unless they're listening in Italy or Spain or maybe some parts of New York. But even there, I mean, they're talking about a peak that's a week or two away. So I guess I kept hearing people, and what they sounded like was that, you know, we've got to just face this crisis. And I'm like, no, this is not the crisis. And right. So because there's a crisis, and I said, you know, churches, we don't need to be asking, how do we save ourselves? I recognize there's a place that we still want to exist. But we need to be asking how we're going to be dealing with mass illness and deaths in our community. I tweeted Sunday night, and this is part of what, just the response to my tweet. I tweeted this week, so that would be, at the time of recording, 8 days ago. I tweeted, this week, somebody you know is probably going to be diagnosed with coronavirus, COVID-19. And I said, next month, someone you know is probably going to die from it. Well, almost everyone I know now knows somebody who's been diagnosed with coronavirus. And you know, we just had our first pastor death in our community. And we're going to see a lot more of that. And so what Josh Laxton and I put together is kind of a four phases to the crisis, so that we would not, right now, you got to get out of phase one, which right. is pause and pivot. And that was what my, I don't know, I mean, 150,000 people watched the Facebook Live. I've never seen that happen before, but it wasn't that. I think there was like this narrative that came from really some unhelpful political comments and some unhelpful news stations that kind of convinced a whole lot of Christians this was not a big deal. And then churches rightfully, well, you know what we do in a crisis is we just, it's human nature to say, how do we protect ourselves through the crisis? But we got to pause and pivot. We got to, that's phase one. Phase two, we should be in now, prepare and plan, because we've got a major crisis where you're going to be asking a whole lot of different questions. Right. We talked to some pastors in Spain and Italy, and one of them was crying, saying, you don't know. Our skating rink has turned into a morgue. We're just a couple of weeks away. I don't know how quickly this podcast gets out, but we're just a couple of weeks away from the defining crisis of our lifetime. And this is not the crisis. Going on Zoom is not the crisis.
Right, right. I want to ask both of y'all this. I am very pro-church, and I also think the best way of loving the church is to be lovingly critical. Yep. And I mean, I've been sustained by our church. Like, I went through a really, really hard time last year with depression and all of that. And so totally am thankful for my position at Seacoast, be able to work with Pastor Greg and all that. But in times like these, sometimes I even think along the lines of, would we be more free to help and just have, I guess, more peace of mind if so many people weren't dependent on salaries and there weren't buildings to be paid for? And again, this isn't anything other than me just thinking about that sort of thing. But right when I think about that, I also think about the unique opportunities that big churches like Seacoast are able to minister to people that you just can't do outside of having thousands and thousands and thousands of people together. But so for example, I mean, I would imagine something that Pastor Greg is concerned about are all the people that depend on Seacoast for a salary.
Yeah.
And I think that is, I sometimes wonder, man, if is does that bite us sometimes? Well, I mean, what do y'all think about that?
Who first?
Yeah, valid concern. I don't think it's, you know, I just came out of a budget meeting just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
One of these what ifs, okay? If this is a V-shaped recession, or if this is a U-shaped, or if this is a depression, what do we do and where do we go? And good conversations. I think employees of the church are people that right. we've got to be concerned about. In fact, Ed, when we were looking at this, and it's similar to what you're saying, I think, but we looked at it. Okay, number one, what do we got to do to, you know, we've got the weekend coming every 7 days. How do we shift that? We shifted it in 6 hours.
Yep. I think.
And, you know, it was okay. It was good. We can do this. We can all do this. And I think it's amazing the innovation that people are doing on the weekend. It's going to be fine. Then the second one was on Monday. And it was, how are we going to take care of our people?
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about the staff. I'm talking about our people. And I got to be honest with you, I was overwhelmed with that
sure.
for a little while. And so we've begun to work on that. And I think we're making progress. We're seeing some good things. And then the third then obviously is, how are we going to take care of the community? Yep. Fortunately, it's not like a hurricane. We're used to hurricanes where it comes in and rips up everything at the same time. We're able to get our bearing. What can we do? And now how are we going to mobilize?
Yeah.
To meet the needs of the community.
Yeah, and I think the way you laid it out is helpful and probably helpful for our listeners. You know, this podcast is geared towards pastors and church leaders, so let's talk about that for just a second, right? There is the immediate need, and I'm not anti that, pause and pivot, okay? Mm-hmm. And people have done that. If you've not done that, I know, I recognize, you know, I mean, I preached at Seacoast. I remember all those TVs on the walls from all the campuses. You guys are used to streaming and your whole living room set. I mean, just bravo. And a lot of people took a little longer to get there, but most people are there now. I'm going to do a video on how to speak to a camera because I just see a lot of pastors who just haven't kind of got that part now. But then I'm sort of done on this because we've got to now move to the second phase. Phase is the term I'm using for the four phases where I'm talking about now plan and prepare for the crisis. But what you're saying is you got like concentric circles. We had to take care of our ability to communicate with our people.
Right.
Now we got to take care of our people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually a biblical thing, you know, be good to, you know, do good to one another, especially those of the household of God. So we're taking care of our people. And there are people in your church, even a church like yours, Greg, I mean, you've been around long enough that you have some older people too, and some of them don't have internet. I mean, my next door neighbors don't have internet. I've checked on all my neighbors and they say, we don't work with the electronics. I was like, well, we're not really, we haven't talked about, but then the,
please third, tell me they're like 80 plus, right?
No, they are. Oh, they are. They are. And then it's not like in their 40s. And then the next phase has got to be the community. But here's what I want you not to miss. You got a week, maybe two, to yep. figure out how to make sure your people are all together and weather this storm, because a church your size is going to experience multiple deaths. Yep. And then you've got another week to then face the deaths that are going to be in the community. And I think ultimately those strategy meetings are important, you know, and you're having them there, and as well you should, Greg. The next strategy is, how do we mobilize our church to deal with mourning and grief? And because remember what we just heard President Trump finally say the things that others have been saying for a while. 100 to 200,000 is the best case scenario everything we do yeah. works. He said the words 2.2 million if we don't do those things. Or another way to put it is, if this doesn't work, that's what. So is it going to be that many? Probably not. But can I just tell you, this will be the greatest tragedy in your lifetime since World War II, in all likelihood. And yet, it's in times like these when the Church of Jesus Christ can stand up. Now, to your question, are there going to be structural things that change? I don't know. Because, I mean, Andy Crouch has written a very compelling argument towards that. And we put some of that. We have a four phases of the crisis. And one of them is, how will your church emerge? Because you're not getting super hit hard when we're recording this in Charleston. But in Chicagoland, we are super hit hard. Mm-hmm. And so in a month from now, when they lift the restrictions, I don't think we're going to be lifted for a while. Maybe Charleston will. So yep. you may be going up and down, and the flexibility that's going to require. But here's the thing that I think most may tell us that, is this going to be, because I get your angst, right? And I feel that angst. Is the structure of the church serving its mission? And we've had this kind of conversation, Joey, for maybe 20 years through the missional church things. You've been part of some of those conversations. And I believe in 1 month, God has done more to advance the missional church conversation than in 15 years of blog posts and podcasts.
That's so awesome.
Not a doubt.
So right.
And here's what I'm just saying, though. Keep in mind that the Spanish flu was 2 to 3 times the mortality, significantly more disruptive, though this is very disruptive. And you know what? You know, I just finished up they called the pastor at Moody Church Sunday, so I'll be wrapping up there. But that church was pastored by Paul Rader during this time, and they were a large church before, they were a large church after. I think structures tend to snap back to what they're, so I don't think that the day of the large church is done because of coronavirus. A lot of it depends on how our communities respond. You know, will they see it the way they're seeing the three pastors who've made a point, or some foolish leaders who've made a point of saying, we're going to ignore all the social distancing. Right. Well, I don't want that to be Greg Surratt in September if the community mm-hmm. feels that that's dangerous. But again, our most recent example is the Spanish flu, and that's not what happened. Churches went back to kind of structurally the way they were. Should that be always the case? Is that always good? I'm not saying it is, but I am saying that's been the pattern in the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wonder if, Joey, honestly, I've been thinking about this a lot, obviously. And as we get ready to go back, number one, what I would say to pastors is to expect the day that you go back to be a very politically divisive day, okay? Because you've got the doctors and scientists over here, you've got the economics and business people over here, and there's gonna be a tension there, and somebody is gonna declare a day sooner than these folks would like to, and probably later than these folks would like to, and then you've got a lot of people going, should we really be doing this? Mm. And so I think you need to prepare in advance for that. But I think that things are going to change, even megachurch-wise. I think at Seacoast, there are probably going to be some people who really, really crave, let's worship together and let's do it. You've got other people that are going, I kind of dig this. You know, I mean, this is really a good experience. And so I think what we've got to do is respond to that. And yep. I think it's going to be a larger both and. Yeah. I think you're gonna see mega churches with house churches.
Yeah, which would be something that, you know, people have thought about. I love your open-handedness, Greg. You're always that way. That's one of the reasons that we all love you. Let me just say that on our podcast, Leadership in the Coronavirus Crisis, the most listened to episode is Neil Cole's episode on how to go to a house church today, how to be a house church today.
He knows how to do it.
Yeah, I know. He's been doing it for 30 years. And so it's like everyone's asking. That's, I mean, more so than Rick Warren's episode, more so than I had a congressman on, Mark Walker. That's the number one. And, but again, I would just say to you that the, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it tends to rhyme. The most likely scenario is what's happened in the cathedrals of Germany were not emptied during the plagues. They were actually filled then and thereafter. But I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows. Here's what I do know. It might be months of learning a new way to do church, which could launch a movement of people in house, missional, simple kind of communities that I, for one, will be cheering on. Sounds like mega church pastor Greg Surratt will be cheering on. So we're all in, man. Let's see God use whatever he wants to use in this time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest reasons for having this conversation is I really appreciated the urgency that I heard from your Facebook Live, and that we've got to move to the next step, because I do think that it will be a stench to people if everyone just sees the church trying to maintain, like you said, the internal stuff. Like it really is a time where we answer the question, do we walk the talk? Like are we going to be like Jesus? And I think the toughest thing for me is the whole trusting thing, and I'm working on that daily. And
brother, I'm working on it too.
Yeah, and I'm welcoming the challenge as well.
Yeah, and let me see if I could share just a quick example. So I wrote an article in USA Today last week, and I chose the title exactly in line with the question that you have, because I don't think this has been a good few years for evangelical Christians and of their reputation of Christians. And I wrote an article for USA Today, and it's called Removing the Coronavirus Mask. May this crisis reveal us as Christians. And I talk in there, you know, some people think of Christians as people just grasping for political power. I talk about some of the reputational challenges. And then I quote Eusebius, the famous church historian who spoke about the fourth century Christians. They're in a plague in the 300s would be the fourth century. So there was a plague. And we've all heard the plague stories, but there's this one line, because I mean, I think everyone has heard every example of a plague story, but there's this one line in there that Eusebius is talking about how the Christians served, how they took care of the sick and the dying. And it says, as the result, the Christians, quote, deeds were on everyone's lips and they glorified the God of the Christians. My prayer is that by the time this is done, we'll reveal who we really are. The masks will come down, the charlatans, and we've seen some, the charlatans will be exposed for who they are. And the end result is that those who show and share the love of Jesus, often at their own risk, this is not going to be a loss-free moment for Christians who choose to serve, that then the end result will be the Christians' deeds will be on everyone's lips and they glorified the God of the Christians.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. You talked a lot about preparing for what is to come. Yeah. And it is really complicating things that we can't be around other people. Yeah. Is there some low-hanging fruit in your mind of things that I should be doing right now with my church family to prepare? Are you talking more of like mental preparedness, or are there tangible things that we can do with our hands right now?
Like, yeah, I think it's some of both. So, you know, so here's the deal. So in January, I said to my wife, I just read some of the reports, and I don't know, I've kind of been a little bit of a science nerd. I have an undergrad degree in science. And I said to her, honey, this is going to be the biggest crisis of our lifetime. I said, matter of fact, one of the things I said is I'm far overweight. And that was one of the comorbidity factors. And so I started in January what we jokingly call the coronavirus diet. So I've lost 41 pounds as of this recording since January.
Dang.
Well, because I don't want to die. I want to serve the Lord in the midst of this. So there are things that, and we prepared in January. We didn't hoard, but we were able to share things with our neighbors. Now, here's what I would say. I've been thinking about this for our team. 2 weeks ago, I asked for them to start putting together resources for mass deaths in communities. And they're like, oh, Ed. And I said, just put it together. And so we'll start releasing them this week and next. But so here's some ways I think we can prepare. I think those are the, right now, a lot of people listening, the audience of this podcast is pastors who are probably thoughtful, maybe leading churches that are kind of out of the norm in size. Right now, you've got your campus worship pastors are basically doing nothing. What can they be doing right now? I shouldn't say that because they could be doing great things. But I mean, the role of the campus worship pastor is really hindered when we're broadcasting from one site. I think we all could agree that we love our campus worship pastors. So who's in charge now of making sure that the widows in the older men and women in our church are cared for during this time? And then who else? We got to retask our staff to meaningful roles, and people need to do meaningful work. And so I would have a whole different teams. Rick Warren said in our interview with him, he said, you need to find partners. And, you know, they're in our county, our school system's doing a great job because most of our poverty is related to school lunch programs. So we can find vulnerable people. And then, so he said, you need partners and then you need new programs. So what are the new lanes that you need to run? One of them is you're going to need a ministry probably in the next 2 weeks to do funerals, to do ministry to people who, it'll be on Zoom, but what an opportunity to share the gospel, but what an opportunity to serve hurting people. So what is your funeral team? I mean, nobody thought about this last week, but now we got to ask, what's our team? Because I mean, Greg, you're not the pastor anymore, right? You're now the
founding pastor.
You're the chancellor or something like that. Yeah. But you know, so what your pastor of a large church is not going to do all those things. So I need everybody ready and trained. You know, how are we going to run our food delivery?
Yeah, I currently do not have a funeral team right now.
Yeah, you will in 2 weeks. You will in 2 weeks.
Golly. You are a part of the funeral team. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's nothing else you can do. And here's the deal: what are you going to do when it starts hitting your staff? You know, you're gonna, you know, there's realities are coming. So what I would say is, and we're still working on this. What are the new roles that people need to do? I had a Zoom interview with a bunch of pastors who said, what are the questions you're asking? And they said, what do we do with the stimulus thing? So I'm putting out something. As soon as I'm off this, we publish something about the stimulus thing. They're asking, how do we now sustain? We thought we were doing 2 weeks online. How do we sustain another month or more online? And they're asking, how do we mobilize people to care for what we know is going to be a major tragedy? Because right now, it's all locked into hospitals. You don't, listen, they can't, because of HIPAA laws, they can't show what's going on in the New York hospitals right now, but it's horrific. I have a friend whose mother is in that hospital, and there people are dying alone. And in within this week in New York, it'll flow out of the hospitals into the Javits Center and into now a tent that Samaritan's Purse has put out in Central Park. That's coming to your town too. Eventually, it's going to break out of the hospitals, and those are going to be places where we can be more engaged. So start making those lists now. What's our funeral team? What's our healthcare worker team? How can we take in the children, for example, of healthcare workers who need to be isolated from their own children because they're around the virus? And how can we minister to their children? So there are creative ways that we can do this, but you need to start that plan right now, not 2 weeks from now, right now.
Ed, we've already begun conversations with the medical community of saying Seacoast could be a hospital. Okay. If you want to build one of those,
yep.
You know, use the building, use part of the building, whatever you need. One of the things that has, really impacted me was reading an article about the fact that people are dying alone. People are dying alone. How do you minister to the family? How do you minister to the person in that situation? And those are all questions that we're trying to figure out. It's not here yet. It is to some degree. We've had a few people die, and Mount Pleasant happens to be the most impacted place in South Carolina because of, a lot of things. But anyway, we're looking at all of that. What do we do? Where do we go? How do we be prepared?
I think that's good.
Is there room for the mentality of, like, is there ever a time that in order to serve other people effectively that we have to let go of needing to protect ourselves? Like, I get the balance of protecting ourselves affects society because we don't want to spread it. But, you know, I think about we'll be able to drink poison and not die, handle snakes and not be bitten and that sort of thing. Like, is there ever a time where we have to say, look, the only way that I can help such and such or this family is to put myself in somewhat of jeopardy?
Yeah. And we do first of all, that's in the longer ending remark, which is not in the best original document. So I'm going to go ahead and not specifically respond to that. That was just a joke. It was just a theological a theological joke.
You are right. You are right.
But it is correct. So here's the thing. I think in the past, you know, when you went back to the Black Plague, Black Death or the plague, in Europe, I mean, people didn't know. I mean, they sort of knew that crowds cause transmission, but there is a cost that you still have to engage. And I think it's going to require Christians to put themselves at risk. Now, I think we should, this is a time when we need to ask the question, what's the best way to do that? So for example, Rick Warren, who was on our earlier podcast, Rick basically, I don't remember what he called it, but he has some pre-existing lung condition. He has to isolate himself. So I want people like that, people have cancer, and even if they beat it, people have immune deficiency or depressed immune systems. I want them on the phone. They're just the phone people. Just going to be, you remember phones? Remember like prayer chains on phones? I mean, so that's, they're going to be working that. But should there be a significant number of Christians in our churches who are in their 20s to in their 40s who are taking a well thought out risk that they're not coming home to people that they can spread it through and they're right. Following social distancing? Yes. And I do believe, I mean, 51 doctors have died in Italy. And I believe that there will be Christians. I mean, I've got a student in one of my classes run a little text chain, and he's, you know, chaplain of the police department. He's involved in gang work and homeless ministry. And then he's homesick right now. And he said, you know, we followed all the precautions. We did the best we can. So yeah, I think, Joey, I just think that the idea that we can do all this and not face risk is never going to be right. And here's the reality. Eventually, this is going to swing around to probably most of us to get it. You just don't want to get it when the hospitals are full and people are there making decisions on who gets on a ventilator. So if you're 65 years old and you have emphysema, this is not your call. But if you're 20 in your 20s to your 40s and you're healthy and you follow all the procedures and do the best, but you're bringing food to the homeless and more, yeah, I think that's an appropriate thing to do. Jesus didn't promise us a risk-free life. And I got to tell you, it's only in the 20th century that Christians would have ever thought that they could live their lives without a pandemic. Pandemics were like Thursdays in, well, you go back hundreds of years. And we can just Google. We think of the Spanish flu. There was like, look up the sweats in England that just started killing people and Christians too. So at the end of the day, we've got a call and a mission. Will that be costly to some people? Yes. Should we be as cautious as we can? Should we consider our neighbors and our family and not do things recklessly? You know, they just arrested Rodney Howard Brown for gathering people in Tampa. I'm thinking through that. I think it's a terrible idea to gather. I'm thinking through the legal implications that are there. But I got to tell you, that's not the reputation Christians need. Reputation Christians need is showing and sharing the love of Jesus. And if that gets you sick, then that's understandable. But if stupid gets you sick, that's just not understandable. It doesn't glorify God.
Yeah, because, I mean, if we are prioritizing it's possible to prioritize our own health to an unhealthy degree. For example, there's a nonprofit food distribution center in the town where our church is at, and they sent out a big email as to how they need help and that sort of thing. But at the same time, everybody there is at risk because when people donate food, they have no idea whether that's contaminated. Yep. You know, so they're asking for people to decontaminate.
But you can take cautions. Right, you can take cautions. And I would say to Martin Luther, actually wrote on this, and it was during a plague, and he said that there are some people who just need to flee. There are times and places you need to flee, and there are some people who need to stay. And he kind of talked about the discernment in the process, and who would have thought we'd be listening and looking? I mean, we all think of Martin Luther as nailing, 55 Reese's to a door. I'd say that Reese's, sorry, he theses. But here's something that can be helpful today, even our considerations of how we might respond to plague.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Pastor Greg, if you don't have anything else, I do want Ed to share some specific, and I'll put it in the show notes. I'm sure Pastor Greg can as well, but tell people about the podcast that you're referencing. And there's also a website, coronavirusinthechurch.com.
Like you got it.
You mentioned Rick Warren and what are you guys up to? What's going on?
I didn't bring my plug in here. So my battery's going. So this is this is my basement. I think a lot of people can't see it, but I know some people are watching this video wise. Let me just go over here so I can plug back in my power cord. Okay. So coronavirusinthechurch.com is the resource that we created with partnership with Saddleback's Peace Plan. Rick Warren and their team helped put some things together that have been helpful for a lot of people. On that, when you go to that place, you'll be able to find a link to our podcast, Leadership in the Coronavirus Crisis. We've had quite an assembly of people, and it's been important conversations about how we can best respond. And that's, if people just want to get that directly, they could go to StetzerLeadershipPodcast.com, and that they're all listed there. We just launched that quickly. The first few episodes don't even have music, so we were so behind the times. But Andy Crouch did the first one, and then we sort of built out from there. So we've had a scientist who's part of the global vaccine team. We've had a constitutional lawyer about can they arrest you for not following those rules. By the way, the answer is yes, and the government does have the constitutional power to shut churches down for a short amount of time. And that's all. They can all find that at go to coronavirusinthechurch.com or Stetzer Leadership Podcast.
Awesome.
Ed, can I just say this, Joey? I know you're going to sign off you're headed toward that area. But thank you, Ed. You are a prophetic voice that we really, really, really need in the church. And I appreciate it. And I want to say thank you.
Love and appreciate you, bro. If you don't mind, let me just throw a little bit of love to my team. They have, a lot of people say, Ed, you're putting a lot of great resources. Let me just say, I got a team of people that are working 24/7 at times, up all night creating the podcast, all night creating Coronavirus in the Church. But this is the advantage with Billy Graham Center. We can move quickly because we have a team that can stop doing other things and move on there. So thanks for your good word. We love you guys. And this is our moment. I want you not to miss this. This is our moment to show and share the love of Jesus. Nobody should wish this plague on anybody, and nobody should take out of context a Christian saying this. But the Lord has called us to say, here I am, Lord, send me. In John 20, I'm preaching, forgive me, Joey, but in John 20, verse 19, the disciples are behind closed doors because of the fear they're going to be arrested by the Jewish leaders. Okay, 2,000 years later, we're behind closed doors. And Jesus came, says, peace to you, not once, but twice. And then he says, as the Father has sent me, so send I you. This is our time. There might be some cost. Let's show and share the love of Jesus.
Well, I want to tack on what Pastor Greg said as well and just say that, listening to your Facebook Live was really the first time that I had actually listened to you, and your ability to speak stern admonitions but do it in a very loving, understanding way was just mind-boggling. Like, I really, really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And Pastor Greg, I'll put in the show notes your phone number for people to call if they need counseling.
Yes.
Please.
Listen, I have, having now been living with the wife that I love so much and three daughters in between 15 and 21 years of age, I need that number for counseling as well. So many words. There's just so many words. But anyway.